Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of the future Liberty State, brought to you once again by On Fire Ministries in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story. And the news behind the news is not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being a man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. It's also about the gospel of the kingdom, Zechariah 2:5, but I declares the Lord will be a wall of fire to her on all sides, and I will be the glory in her midst. Today in America, we have a choice to make. Either we will lay down and let the globalists win, or we will stand up and we will fight. It is the job of every Christian. It is the duty of every Christian to stand and fight, to dominate in the family, to dominate in government, to dominate in the media, to dominate in business, to dominate in the arts and entertainment, to dominate in education, to dominate even in the religious sphere. We're supposed to be preaching the truth in a way that dominates across everything. And today, some are preaching that we should just sit back and take it. Well, that's not the American way. That's not what the Founding Fathers believed. In fact, the First Great Awakening from 1730 to about 1770, right before the Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War, George Whitefield traveled, sometimes at the great cost of his own personal health, up and down the East Coast of the United States, but it wasn't the United States then. It was just colonies. He would travel so much that he preached about, and this is an average, three sermons a day for, get this, 30 years. That kind of dedication, and that kind of dedication transformed the Founding Fathers, and many of those pastors that were involved in that First Great Awakening had apprentices who later became leaders in the United States government of what we know today as Founding Fathers. So the question for us is today, what are we willing to sacrifice to see this country remain free for the next generation? What are we going to sacrifice? What are we willing to sacrifice so that, as Benjamin Franklin so eloquently asked, it's a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. What are we willing to sacrifice to keep it? What are we going to sacrifice to keep it? Now today, as many of you know, there was a kind of a seminal event in American history, and I'm going to get to that here in a little bit. But what I want you to know is that there are some very easy solutions. The first solution has to do with the family. And our guest today, Simon Essler, is going to be talking about the deconstruction of the family, and really we tie it into that four stages of the subversion of a country talked about by Thomas Schumann, which was his otherwise known as name, Yuri Bezmenov. And the idea of deconstructing the family first and that everything else would be subverted after that, I think is really key to understanding what we're seeing in the United States and around the world today. So we're going to be talking about that. But the solution then is, if they don't want us to have kids, then we should have kids. If they don't want us to have puppies, as we talked about on a few shows ago, you know, the World Economic Forum wants to euthanize puppies, then we should all have puppies, right? I mean, we should do exactly what the World Economic Forum is advocating. Get married, have kids, get puppies, buy some land, grow some fruit trees, plant a garden. Make it provision. These are very simple things that we all can do. But what it does is it changes our mindset, and it ties it back to the principles that made this country great. The cycle of life and death, growing things seasonally, all of these things tie us back to the original plan of God. And that original plan of God was for us to take dominion on this earth. And even Jesus Christ himself said, because a lot of people say, well, that was in the Old Testament. Well, in the New Testament, Jesus Christ also said, occupy till I come. And we do need to occupy until he comes. And so this isn't the time to give up. This isn't the time to shrink back. This isn't the time to make excuses for why we cannot make something happen. Now is the time to think about guys like George Whitefield, who at the end of some of his sermons would spit up blood, get on his horse, go to the next town. He was willing to sacrifice that much. And as a result, the United States became the greatest beacon of freedom and light to the entire world and that the world has ever seen. The greatest source of missionaries, the greatest source of funding for missionaries, the greatest source spreading the gospel of the kingdom around the world. And it only took one man. Are you that man? Are you that woman that is willing to answer that call, yield everything to the Lord, and see this generation through the hardest time in American history? And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. But first, because I really want people to get this idea of having kids and getting puppies, and that was kind of serious what I was just talking about, let's see a visual of what this actually looks like when we have kids and puppies and they're together. Go ahead and roll the cue. Now, I'm going to end with this. God's plan is literally the exact opposite of the World Economic Forum. Number one, get married. Number two, have lots of kids, more than you think you can handle. Because World Economic Forum, by the way, said, now we're going to try to like euthanize all the puppies and cats to like end global warming. Get married, have lots of kids, and make sure every single one of your kids has a puppy in Jesus' name. Amen. So, Travis, do we have a video of puppies and kids? Let's give that visual as well to go along with that. Yes, that's what it looks like to have kids and puppies all in the same place. Right there. All kinds of love, all kinds of hope, all kinds of joy. All right, well, that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing and on the globalist front. So I'm gonna make the briefing a lot more intentional here going into the future. We're going to be rolling a lot of clips from different things. And then I want you just to kind of understand the format that we're talking about. We're going to be talking about the globalists and what the globalist agenda is. Then we'll be talking about China, the Middle East, talking about Russia, Ukraine, talking about the national events. And then we're going to have a segment not only that talks about local events, but we're going to talk about miracles that have been happening around the world and how God has been moving. So first, on the international front, coming to us from Reclaim the Net, Android update. Android, not iPhone. Yet. Update. To introduce digital ID wallets, the controversial tech is rolling out this summer. Google Wallet, the Android version of the wallet app on iPhones, has started supporting digital IDs and driver's licenses. The company said the feature will begin rolling out this month, supporting the global push to get citizens to adopt digital ID measures. Well, if this is what the World Economic Forum wants us to do, really simple solution, do the exact opposite and don't do the digital ID. And why this is important is because the first step is a global ID, and then they're going to tie the global ID into your bank accounts, and they're going to tie the global ID into your social credit score, and then they're going to tie the global ID into your healthcare. They're going to tie the global ID into your business, and they're going to tie the global ID into every single part of your daily life so they can control you. So don't do this. Not only that, with all of the hacking that's been happening recently and the Chinese uptick in hacking attacks against the United States, clearly this doesn't make sense because the Chinese are searching for this kind of stuff actively right now. Which brings us next to China. Coming to us from Twitter, Claire Lopez. U.S. government, U.S. labs, researchers, and universities knowingly collaborated with the CCP, PLA, so that's the Chinese Communist Party, and the People's Liberation Army, biological weapons program with funding and expertise for years. Wow. Now, it's interesting. She continues, not just creation of the pandemic, bioengineering of deadly pathogens by the CCP PLA for decades under the civilian military fusion model of their biological weapons program with explicit and very public intent to unleash them on America and other enemies. And this is correct. This is what the Chinese absolutely intended to do. So as this push now for what they call friendshoring happens, why are we still funding Chinese bioweapon labs? Why are we doing that? That's a fantastic question for the Biden administration. And obviously Trump wouldn't do that. So that brings us to the next thing. If we're going to be friendshoring, and India looks like a place where a lot of things will be moved to, can India replace China as a global manufacturing and economic powerhouse? It's coming to us from the Epoch Times. This is an interesting thing. Experts have told the Epoch Times that the narrative of India replacing China is overplayed with a reality that is more nuanced. India is on its own unique trajectory of growth. It should identify its own strengths and should cultivate its own path toward global emergence, they said. So in other words, while India is an option, India probably not in the near term is able to totally take on all of the friendshoring. Here's the easy solution. How about we get government out of the way? We start drilling, mining. We start doing selective cutting in our forests again. We retool our manufacturing through the tool and die industry so that we can, reopen sawmills. We can reopen smelters. We can reopen foundries. And we can start manufacturing ourselves again like we did only a few short decades ago. I mean, obviously, there's lots of factories and old buildings, especially in old places like Detroit, that could be retooled and refitted. And this is what we have to do in the United States of America. And I know President Trump is looking at that because he said he was even looking at building 10 new cities. We get government out of the way, and it is just a matter of time for prosperity to just absolutely blossom in the United States. That brings us next to the Middle East. Deb Kafile, U.S. and Israel stunned. Iran offers to help Saudis. The Shia helping the Sunnis. Remember, I talked about this fake kind of Sunni-Shia divide that is really overplayed a lot of times. They work together on a lot of stuff. What they argue of is who's going to be in charge of the caliphate. U.S. and Israel stunned. Iran offers to help Saudis develop nuclear program with, wait for it, China's backing. Iran has swiftly followed up on its thaw with Saudi Arabia by offering to help the oil kingdom develop a nuclear program. Beijing, which brokered the reconciliation, is again stepping forward with backing. So not only would Iran be a nuclear power, but Saudi Arabia would be as well. What about Turkey? Well, wait for it, because that one is going to be next. That brings us next to Russia-Ukraine. Coming to us from Open Source Intelligence Defender, OSINT Defender, the Chief of Staff for the 35th Combined Arms Army, Major General Sergei Goryachev, was reportedly killed yesterday by a Ukrainian missile strike. Now, why is this important? Because the Russians had been losing a lot of generals, and there was kind of a lull. Now they're losing generals again. During this Ukrainian offensive, and it very clearly looks like there is going to be more of that happening in the near future. Now, I want to explain what's happening on the ground between Ukraine and Russia right now. The Ukrainians are doing what is called a reconnaissance in force, or maybe probably more colloquially, the probing of the lines across the entire front to see where the weak place is and then attack everything there. That is obviously what is going on right now. Again, the bigger picture outside of this is, what does the world look like after some kind of peace is brokered, or does this actually go into World War III? Now, because we have been talking about many of the things happening and unfolding in the Pacific, it really does look like we are, in fact, headed toward World War III, and that is obviously what the intent is to bring in a one world government, one world economy, one world religion, similar to what they did after World War One, similar to what they did after World War Two. So in the Pacific, and jumping very just kind of quickly back to China and Taiwan and Japan, you now have, according to open source intelligence, you now have the Japanese manufacturing, and they just passed a law. So not only can they manufacture for themselves, but they can also manufacture and export to other countries anti-ship weapons, and it looks like some kind of hypersonic missile defense weapons as well. So I bring this up because everything is not pointing to a de-escalation, even if there is peace in Russia-Ukraine. In fact, it's actually pointing in the opposite direction. Which brings us to the next thing on open source intelligence under the Russia-Ukraine front. Kosovo's Prime Minister, Albin Kurti, has introduced a plan aimed at reducing tensions in the northern part of the country. The plan proposes new elections and reducing special police, both of which have been seen as a source of tension, but this proposal being pushed by the United States and the EU. The announcement comes one day after a Serb was arrested for organizing the recent unrest, which about 200 Serbs gathered and skirmished with police. Also on the Russian-Ukraine front, coming to us from open source intelligence, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko said today that Russian nuclear weapons will be deployed in his country in several days. So now this is not just being talked about. It's actually happening that the weapons that will be transferred to Belarus will be, quote, tactical in nature, end quote. Russia will maintain full control of the missiles. So Russia is deploying tactical nuclear weapons to the front lines. Again, does not bode for de-escalation or peace in that region of the world. It actually bodes ill that there will be a world war. All right. Want to move next to the national front. Historic day in Miami, Florida. Trump pleads not guilty, no further conditions imposed, no travel restrictions, no cash bond imposed. This is coming to us from Gateway Pundit. 37 counts is what President Trump was indicted on. This clearly is election interference. And this is what previously had happened in banana republics around the world. What I want to really highlight here is this. In ancient Rome, there was a river called the Rubicon. And when Caesar, who became Caesar, crossed the Rubicon, it was something that everybody knew would result in effectively a Roman civil war. Essentially, the Rubicon was a river that the Roman military could not go south of. And when he did, everybody knew there was going to be a Roman civil war. Many people are saying that this is a Rubicon that has been crossed with the indictment of President Trump. I do not think that that is the case, actually. I think we crossed that a long, long time ago. And I think there's just a realization that is beginning right now. And so many people across the country have been talking about civil war inside the United States borders. What I would say to you is, if Christians stand up, get off the couch, join the Kingdom to Capital tour, show up, actually vote, stand up in their communities, put in good prosecutors who have an understanding of the global conspiracy that is happening right now through the communists and jihadists in those counter states. We actually start prosecuting the real bad actors, rooting out the cells in the United States. That option doesn't have to happen. And I think some people have just kind of said, well, it's just a matter of time, I'm waiting. When in fact, right now should be the time when we're acting the most. It should be the busiest time for us. It should be the time we're the most engaged. And there's some opportunities, and I'm going to bring those up here in a couple of minutes. And that brings us next to The largest Catholic healthcare system in America is performing transgender surgeries on children and providing other gender-affirming care services, from the Gateway Pundit. Listen, there are so many places where the church is supposed to be acting, okay, but that have been compromised, and intentionally the left has targeted them to compromise them. Catholic healthcare system performing transgender surgeries is just one example of that. I mean, this should be a no-brainer. We should not be doing this as Christians, right? Well, I would venture to say probably Christians aren't running it. Another place where there can be action and engagement. That brings us next to Twitter and another article by the Gateway Pundit. Flashback, CDC-funded studies show no significant difference in COVID-19 transmission between vaccinated and unvaccinated. With all the new reports coming out, they did this flashback, and everybody needs to hear that again. No significant difference in COVID transmission between vaccinated and unvaccinated. Fascinating. That brings us, I love this, okay? I absolutely love this. That brings us to our miracle segment. Coming to us from the Western Journal. Amazing. This comes to us from the country of Ecuador. Mourners stunned after dead woman wakes up in coffin at her own funeral. Miracle from God. I don't know what else to say about this, but could you imagine being at this funeral? She starts banging on the inside of her own coffin. And 76-year-old Bella Montoya comes out of the coffin, totally alive, after the death certificate had already been issued. God is moving today. Miracles are possible. And the idea that Christians don't have any power moving through them, the idea that Christians, you know, can't really affect anything, it's hogwash. God wants to move through each one of us. His Holy Spirit is moving today. His power is here today, and he's given us all authority over all the power of the enemy. We just need to be there so that that can happen. That brings us to the regional front. Super excited. Two huge events coming. I need you to pay attention right now. The first event, right here at On Fire Ministries, 115 East Pacific, June 21st. So next week, 6 p.m., right here, downtown Spokane, Sean Foyt is going to be at On Fire Ministries, and we're going to be doing a revival worship night, but also he's going to be rallying everybody for the event that's coming up after that, which I'm going to tell you about here in a second. So please show up. We're also going to be streaming this Wednesday, June 21st, 6 p.m., 115 East Pacific, right here at On Fire Ministries. Sean Foyt coming back to Spokane, Washington. Look forward to seeing all of you there. And that brings us to the second big event. Now, I want you to mark this on your calendar. Whatever you have to do to take this day off, you need to take the day off. You need to show up. Share this with your friends, with your family, with your pastor. Share it with every member of your church. Share it on social media across the board. We want to see what Washington State is capable of on July 28th at 6 p.m. in Olympia, Washington. The Kingdom to the Capital tour is coming. We are expecting over 20,000 people to be there. So whatever you need to do, show up. We're going to show up as Christians under one banner, the banner of Jesus Christ. And we are bringing that light to the darkest place in Washington State. And we are going straight in there and bringing the love of Jesus right to downtown Olympia, Washington. Kingdom to Capital Tour, July 28th, 6 p.m. I look forward to seeing all of you there. This is going to be a history-making event. You're not going to want to miss this. You're not going to want to say, well, I didn't know it was going to happen. I want you to share it with everybody you possibly can. Go online, find us on social media, and go ahead and share it. Now, for some reason, by the way, we've been banned on Truth Social, which is very weird. We're trying to work through that right now, so Truth Social is not working. We have no idea why that happened. And not to mention, it's supposed to be a free speech platform. So go to Gab, go to MeWe. You can even find us on Facebook and Twitter. So find it, share the event, and make sure you are there. So June 21st, right here in Spokane, and then July 28th in Olympia, Washington, at the Capitol. Whew. That is the briefing. And I'm telling you, I'm excited about this stuff. There is so much going on. You should be excited too. People have been asking, well, Matt, we're just going to a different event. Man, bringing the power of God right to the center of the heart of darkness like that can't help but transform things. But also, you get to connect with a bunch of other like-minded folks. And we can see the rest of the United States emboldened as well. So if you get the opportunity, go to GabMeWe, Getter, find us on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon. Share the show. Share it with your friends and family. This is going international now, and really thank everybody down there, especially in Paraguay and New Zealand. We give you tons of honor today. Thank you for all the support. And if you get the chance as well, you can go to iReadEpoch.com. Type in promo code Patriot Radio. Get to support two great causes. All right, that brings us now to our guest today, Simon Essler. He's a warrior for free thought. His work ranges from in-depth documentaries to science fiction comedies. And recently, Simon's film, Cut, Daughters of the West, shines light on what has led to the rise in transgenderism and ultimately the deconstruction of the family. You can find him at SimonEssler.com, SimonEssler.com. And Travis, if we could cue the trailer right now, we're going to go ahead and cue the trailer. So for the radio, you might just hear a little bit of music, but we're going to cue the trailer for everybody watching online right now for his movie, Cut, Daughters of the West.
In August of 2022, Obstetrics and Gynecology reported on the latest demographic characteristics of patients undergoing labiaplasty.
The latest rate in school shopping includes new body parts.
The highest rate of cases was observed among adolescent and young women in the United States.
I have to do something crazy that would make me feel happy.
Make me feel happy.
So what this graph shows is they deliberately harmed themselves to the point where they had to be hospitalized. So the rate for 15 to 19-year-old girls is up 62%. Since 2009. Now, the youngest girls, these are 10 to 14-year-old girls. It's up 189%. It has nearly tripled in the last 5 or 6 years.
What's the cause?
Confusing them. I mean, confusing them to the level that they would go to the extreme to butcher their own bodies.
Self-harm has always been more of a girl thing than a boy thing. It's the leading candidate, and the timing, look at that timing, is social media. These are 10 to 14-year-old girls. These are preteens. They used to have very low rates.
Starting around the age of 12, I began to believe that I was transgender.
It's like a virus came out of nowhere.
Between 2016 and 2017, the number of gender surgeries for natal females in the United States quadrupled.
I thought it was about tolerance. I thought these rainbows were nice. I didn't think they were so bad. I didn't see the dark side of it.
In 2018, the UK reported a 4,400% rise in teenage girls seeking gender treatments.
They didn't used to cut themselves.
It's the sweeping nature of transgender ideology that is overtaking our entire society.
Using their fight or flight are being hijacked.
Everyone has transphobia.
They're being told every day that they're going to die unless something happens.
Would you rather have a dead daughter or a live son?
Do you want a dead daughter or a living son?
No one explored why I did not want to be a girl. Who here really believes that as a 15-year-old I should have had my healthy breast removed or that should have been an option?
I don't know if I'm going to be able to have kids.
There are interest groups that benefit from taking advantage of individuals' fight or flight mechanisms on a daily basis.
They didn't used to cut themselves.
And you can't go back. I'm ruined.
I have to do something crazy that would make me feel happy.
Cut, Daughters of the West, SimonEssler.com. Simon, it's great to have you on Patriot Radio. Welcome, and especially after this pornographic display we saw on the White House lawn yesterday, I think this is absolutely perfect timing to have you on. If you could share with the listeners a little bit, why is this happening? What is this deconstruction of the family? Where is it coming from? And candidly, where is it going?
Well, we are looking at a form of sophisticated warfare. It is utilizing Marxist concepts that definitely do aim to deconstruct the family. This is something that has been going on for a long time. So we're looking at multiple generations of warfare that is seeking to disrupt the unity of the family unit and the ideal of the family culturally, so that a new world order can be installed. And these things are very much connected. Specifically, because the family is the means by which knowledge and wisdom is passed from generation to generation. If the stable family is disrupted, then what you have is children who are not able to orient themselves based on the knowledge of the family and the wisdom that is passed on through the generations. And so they become reliant upon social engineering. Their only sources to orient themselves in the world become the government and become the media and the public schools. And so disrupting the family unit enables a deeper form of social control so that our entire societal structure can be upended. And they are using Marxism that is being developed in the universities and the post-secondary institutions. And then that is trickling down into the rest of society so that everything becomes deconstructed. You know, some of the more extreme ideas I've come across in some of my latest research is they're talking about the construct of childhood innocence needing to be done away with, and that childhood innocence is a dangerous construct, and that we need to do away with the adult child binary and all of this nonsense. They are taking it towards trying to establish this new world order, this entirely different social structure that is the end of nation states and that allows children to be completely controlled by the state.
Well, let's talk about one of the most shocking things you just said, this adult child binary, right? Let's talk about what that really is, pedophilia. We talked about this actually 10 years ago in the Washington State Legislature, and people were like, it's never going to happen. And yet we still saw back then the NAMBLA displays, and they were marching, and nobody was really saying much about them except, oh, those aren't us, right? But now it seems to be mainstream. Talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so there is this normalization of pedophilia going on, and as per usual, a lot of this is coming from these post-secondary institutions. So you want to look at what they're doing in academics. So many people have now heard this term minor attracted persons, and this is based on the idea that they should be given a more respectful name and that they need to be treated as people with a valid sexual orientation. And this is the push right now. This is what's coming from some corrupt science and academia, that people are just born pedophiles. They can't help it. They're born attracted to children. It's not their fault. And that you need to basically accept this as a sexual orientation, and that moving forward, we're going to have to accept it as a sexual orientation. And the danger right there is really that what they're working towards is getting the civil rights of the pedophile, right? Just as they've done in the past with other similar movements, you're looking at the civil rights of the pedophile, which of course endangers children. And you know, one of the things that I found they're doing is trying to promote this idea that you absolutely cannot change a pedophile's sexual orientation. It's a permanent, lifelong thing. There is no help they can get. There's nothing you can do but help them accept it. And this is one of the major dangers, because the unfortunate truth is that we do have a lot of pedophiles in the world. You know, some of the most conservative estimates talk about 1-2% of men in the world being pedophiles. Wow. Right now. That's like 60 million people on the planet. So we have to confront this, right? Like, we have to confront the issue of, we have a lot of mentally ill people. Right. There's a mental illness component here, and there does need to be an acknowledgement of, like, how do you help all these men with this severe mental illness? And at the same time, how do you not allow the normalization? This is where we get into the weeds of what is the difference between some of the destigmatization that might be needed to stop men who have this mental illness from offending? Because, of course, we want to get to them before they go to the child porn, before they go to the abuse. So how do you help with the destigmatization level there, just to get some of these very sick men help, while at the same time not participating in the normalization campaign that is ongoing in the media, in the schools, and in the government?
Well, I think that's the most confusing thing for me, right? I mean, you have all this arbitrary law out there that says, well, you know, you're 13, you can make your own healthcare decisions without your parents, right? You can go have abortion, right? But you can't own a pistol until you're, you know, 18, 21 in some states, right? And then you have this other part of it that they say, well, you know, children really don't develop their minds until the age of about 24 to 26. But yet, we're also saying that they, and it's the same people saying this, by the way, we also say that they can make their own sexual choices with somebody that could be 30 years older than them at 13, 14, 15. I mean, how do we address this? Because for most of us, this is so beyond the pale, you almost don't even know where to start because you're like, well, don't you think that's wrong? And so people say no.
Yeah, I mean, we have to sort out here a lot of the layers that are going on. So when you look at pedophilia from a clinical perspective, right? So in the DSM, they look at pedophilia as an illness in which someone cannot stop having these persistent sexual thoughts about children to the extent that it disrupts their ability to function in their daily life. So you have right there, this is a kind of mental illness where they can't get through the day. But mixed into a lot of this, I believe, is really psychopaths. So we have to acknowledge the difference between psychopathy and this clinical form of pedophilia, because you do have some people in hidden throughout society and unfortunately in positions of power who enjoy the suffering of children. And that's very different from pedophilia in terms of the mental illness perspective. I think this is one of the things that we want to be very careful with here, because the push is going to be to create all sorts of confusion around what is and is not a pedophile. And we want to be very clear on what they're up to. The big distinction they're trying to push right now with this minor attracted persons campaign is the difference between an offending pedophile and a non-offending pedophile. Now, that is relevant. It is, of course, relevant because, like I said earlier, we want to stop the people with this illness from offending. At the same time, they're going to be using this idea of non-offending pedophiles to push forward laws and this idea of the civil rights of the pedophile, because the idea is that you are oppressing people who haven't done anything wrong. You are oppressing people who merely have sexual thoughts about children, and then it can be flipped. So it's like, oh, well, what are you attacking them for having a thought crime? Are they not allowed to have certain thoughts?
Mm.
And this is, you know, it's a sticky little trap they're trying to set, and we have to be clear on how they're doing this. We have to be against naming this as an orientation. Number one, 100%, it should not be deemed an orientation at all. And we have to be supportive of getting healing, like helping the people with this mental illness. We have to acknowledge that there are some levels of healing that can go on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was very, very well put. Now, I want to shift to the next part of the deconstruction of the family, and that is the attempt to basically erase the father from the equation. And this whole epidemic of fatherlessness sweeping the country. You know, 4 times greater risk of poverty, 2 times greater risk of infant mortality, 7 times more likely to become pregnant as a teen, more likely to face abuse and neglect, more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, and it goes on and on and on. What are you seeing in this realm, number one? And number two, how do you think we can address this issue regarding the deconstruction of the family?
Well, the ideal of the father and of the strong man, you know, and these more traditional notions of masculinity, we need to be able to produce and consume culture that uplifts those ideals. You know, I'm part of a group called Dad Army, and we work alongside a group called Mom Army, and we're very much about this. I think, you know, there are ways to address this culturally that are very healthy. What I've seen is that there are a lot of men who have succumbed to this programming of toxic masculinity that is in and of itself very dangerous because it creates this notion that men are sort of inherently toxic and have to unlearn their toxic masculinity. We want to look at ideals of masculinity that, yes, represent strength, you know, and this sense of protecting women and children. But I think it does need to be balanced in terms of men being able to stay in touch with their innocence. And this is one of the big struggles we have. Men's mental health is very, very poor in North America. There's a huge chance that a man will kill himself compared to other groups, right? So a lot more men are committing suicide. We want to look at what it means to have men stay in touch with their own innocence, with their inner child. And I think this is where the balance can get thrown off, right? That there is a big push to maintain this ideal of strong men who are warriors and are willing to battle. But historically, what has been sacrificed is really the man's mental health. And so what does it mean to be a man in our culture, to have that sense of strength and to protect innocence and to protect women, but at the same time, to protect one's own mental health and to be able to stay in touch with your own innocence. Because what I see is a lot of children, frankly, being abused or being mistreated by their parents because their parents have their own trauma. Their parents are disassociated from their own innocence, their own inner child. And when you aren't in touch with that, you're not going to be able to clearly see the ways in which your child is being harmed. And I think the reconstruction of masculinity that we're looking at now could be better than it ever has been. And we have an opportunity now. You know, we do. I think it's very important.
I agree 100%. And, you know, with men, the idea of maturity, too, that we're not supposed to be a child our entire lives. And that's kind of been, you know, that's kind of been promoted in the media. And then the other is, you know, we have kind of the Homer Simpson profile of the dad, the blundering doofus who can never get anything right. So there's really never any respect there. And men really do need respect as just an emotional plug-in to them. They need respect just as much as they need love, and so do women. They need love. They need that respect, and really society is actually with a narrative war trying to come right against that. How do you think we can address that part of the equation?
Well, I think recognizing the extent to which men are designed to be fathers, I mean, really, truly, this is an incredible thing. In some of the research I've found, and I think this is important because we want to create culture that is representative of life itself, of the natural world, of the actual biological world in which we live. So in some of the research I've done, you know, I looked into this when I was becoming a father. I was fascinated by this ridiculous idea of the bumbling dad who didn't know what he was doing. And so I looked into what is the science of fatherhood? You know, what does this really mean? And there's beautiful studies showing that when a man is devoted to the pregnant woman. So devoted meaning he is present, he is near her body as the baby is growing. There is an actual biological effect that is unfolding, and it's changing the man's body. So the woman is emitting a kind of biofield that is altering the man's biochemistry, and the man's emotional landscape is actually changed by the impact of the pregnant woman's body. In some of these studies, what they found was that there's a substance called prolactin that went way up in men who were present during the actual 9 months of gestation. The rise in prolactin, what they found was that after the child was born, it made the man's body more responsive to his child's cries. So the mom's body was actually a kind of bridge, creating a connection between the father and his child. This is built into us. This actual biology of family devotion is real. I believe we need culture that reflects these things, that uplifts these discoveries that have been around. This isn't brand new science that represents this. And so if you want a man to transform, one of the most powerful things you can do is make a man a father, but more specifically, a devoted father. And this changes men in a very positive way. Another study they found was that the first moment a man holds his newborn child, that man's testosterone temporarily drops by 33%, changing his emotional landscape and allowing him to more deeply connect with that child. So the ways in which men are designed to be devoted to women and children, these are biological terms that we can connect with. And then I think we should continue to make culture that reflects those truths.
Simon, that's absolutely beautiful the way that you describe that, and I love it too. We got to follow the science. I love how that connects in as well. So this last Sunday, I gave a sermon on family. So Travis, if we could go ahead and roll that cue, I want to get your reaction to it. Now, I'm going to end with this. God's plan is literally the exact opposite of the World Economic Forum. Number one, get married. Number two, have lots of kids, more than you think you can handle. Because World Economic Forum, by the way, said, now we're going to try to, like, euthanize all the puppies and cats to, like, end global warming. Get married, have lots of kids, and make sure every single one of your kids has a puppy in Jesus' name. Amen.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I think people are waking up to the power of some of these traditional ideals, but then also rediscovering the potential of them to create, I think, new ways of living with that foundation. This is something that I'm very passionate about because I did wedding ceremonies for years here in Toronto, but they were custom wedding ceremonies that were focused on taking the love story of that couple and building the wedding ceremony according to who they were when they were separate and then who they became as they grew together in love. And the ceremony being infused and being born of their story, it blew people away every time because there was kind of an attitude of like wedding ceremonies are boring. It's all these old traditions. It's like disassociated from my friends that I know. And so I think we can take some of these beautiful old ideals and bring them forward into the world and use them as a means of honoring who people really are and their individuality. Because as we can see, there's a lot of collectivism being used in this warfare coming from groups like the World Economic Forum, right? They want this idea of groupthink to dominate and that you give up your identity for the collective. And so I believe that if we can use these old traditions to honor individuality, the uniqueness of each person, and let our rituals be born of how richly unique each person is and each couple are, that is another pushback, exactly like you're talking about, antithetical to what the World Economic Forum preaches. You know, I'm very passionate about that. And I'm actually writing a book right now that is designed to help parents develop rites of passage for their children, because I believe that's one of the things that is missing right now. And you do that best, I believe, in the same way, by allowing that rite of passage to be born of who that child is and knowing them deeply.
Amen. Simon, we were just talking about that. Some of our elders here about the rite of passage we're going to be doing later this summer for some of our young men. My dad took me on a rite of passage, and it was hard, and it was meant to be hard, but it was also meant to affirm who I am at the most deep, basic level that God has programmed me with, and just that calling that's in my life. So, man, that you're speaking my language right now. That's fantastic. I want to shift a little bit on the individuality part and talk about transgenderism and talk about the movie Cut. This is an attempt, it looks like, to just deface those that are made in the image of God. And, you know, yesterday on the White House lawn, we saw somebody who had a double mastectomy flash the cameras. We saw another man who had breast implants put in flash right on the White House lawn. I mean, just 10 years ago, people would have thought that's impossible and never happened. And yet here it is. And it's almost a glorification of mutilation. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. So what is Cut about, and what do people need to know about this that they may not have heard in the mainstream media?
So Cut is an invitation to understand the gender explosion, specifically in girls, right? So this gender ideology thing has taken off in girls in a very unique way. We are living through fifth generation warfare. And yes, this is a kind of warfare that is designed to be difficult to perceive. So the idea is that the people being attacked don't know they're being attacked. They don't know they're in a war. They don't know they're losing the war. But the other aspect of fifth generation warfare is that it's based on manipulating cognition, trying to control the way people cognize reality, and it's based on narratives. And so Cut is an invitation to understand this from a different narrative, from outside of these hyper-politicized narratives, which I think are actually creating more division and oftentimes are not necessarily helping save children, because those political ideologies and those forms of political division are promoting things like all left-wing people must support this, which is not true, or the idea that the best way to save kids is to become more politically conservative, when the truth is that if we can actually create dialogue and a broader understanding that reaches across the political aisle, that is what will save more children. So when I started researching for this, I wanted to take a deep, hard look into the incremental forms of social and cultural change that have been ongoing, because my understanding of the war that we're in is that there is this incremental style of communist Marxist warfare that moves things very slowly, generation by generation, so that there are new norms installed that people do not understand. And when I looked into the development of the cosmetic surgery industry, this is, I think, one of the foundations to the current explosion in gender ideology and transitioning of girls that people fail to understand. It's, I think, why Cut is a powerful film, because it will broaden your understanding of what's going on here. I'll give you an example. before there was this huge explosion in girls getting double mastectomies and testosterone injections and all of this, there was an exponential rise in girls getting not just breast augmentations, but labiaplasties. We're talking about minors getting cosmetic genital surgery. This was exploding in teen girls before this gender craze took off. And that's important to recognize because we are looking at a cultural norm that very incrementally was brought in and specifically targeted women and girls. 92 to 94% of all cosmetic surgeries are performed on women and girls. This is targeting the female form very specifically. So that whole industry is functioning off the manipulation of the female form. And the message that I really could tease out of this once I looked at this slow changing of our culture was really to tell girls and women that your body is an obstacle to who you are. And that message has been normalized slowly but surely as the cosmetic surgery industry has been targeting younger and younger clients, which is why now we have girls getting labiaplasties. And the messaging is not just from cultural production. So it's not just from the influence of pornography, which of course is part of it, right? They're seeing all kinds of nudity and airbrushed women and just ideals of what their genitals should look like. You have things like that going on, but you also have outright misinformation coming from the medical industry, from the cosmetic surgery industry. They're saying things like 50 to 60% of girls and women have labia minora hypertrophy, which is this claim that they have oversized labia and they need to get them cut anyway. This is what I found was going on as a foundation in our culture. Wow. So that, of course, when girls were handed gender ideology and told you can just get your breasts cut off and become a new person, you know, I started to realize how different is that if we're talking about ideals and cultural messaging, how different is that than the girls who were getting cut up for these other reasons? So this is what I think people need to see cut for, is to get that broader perspective of how incrementally the fabric of our culture was changed so that this explosion was possible.
And so listeners make this connection with Marxist strategy. You know, stage four, as Yuri Bezmenov said, an ideological subversion is normalization. So when we talk about normalization, this becomes the new normal. This actually applies in issues that might be seemingly totally disconnected from, you know, geopolitical or military affairs. It actually has to do exactly with this kind of narrative warfare that we're talking about today. Simon, we're almost out of time. Final thoughts, and where can people go to find the content?
So people can go to daughtersofthewestfilm.com to watch the film. And you will actually also get a bonus feature. If you rent or purchase, you'll get to watch another film that I wrote called Vague Rules that helps people understand how communist warfare was brought into the West using things like CRT, gender ideology, the response to COVID. So you actually get two films. I think we're looking at, you know, wrapping this up from a perspective of solutions. There's a lot we can be doing. This is why I'm writing a book on rites of passage, because I believe that gender ideology actually mimics a rite of passage, which is another reason why I think it took off in girls. There is a section on my website for the film at daughtersofthewestfilm.com that has resources, and that is practical resources that are suppressed and hard to find for families to navigate this. Therapy, medical information, legal information. There's offerings to help keep your kids off smartphones and social media up until a certain age. So check out the resources section there, because we need to be solution oriented. And I think the more we can learn about the war we are in and understand fifth generation warfare, the more we can let that war fill us with purpose and become very intentional in how we step up and respond and protect children and innocence in general.
Simon Essler, thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. God bless you. I love this stuff. Keep up the fight. And when you get that book out, I want to make sure you're back on. We want to really promote that, because this is a huge part of reclaiming America, this idea of reclaiming the family as well. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right, Simon Essler, SimonEssler.com, SimonEssler.com, and check out Cut, Daughters of the West. Check out his resources, and he's got this Rite of Passage book coming out as well. Just fantastic material. Great job, and really look forward to having him back on, Travis. That was a fantastic show. All right, in the closing segment today, Sean Foyt coming June 21st, right here in Spokane, Washington, at On Fire Ministries, 6 p.m. 115 East Pacific. Look forward to seeing you all here. You're going to want to get here early, but the doors don't open until 5:30. There will be a pastor roundtable at 5 o'clock. So if you know a pastor that should be here and she'd be part of this roundtable, please register, send an email, let us know. We want to make sure pastors come in, have a chance to talk to Sean and about just the general direction of the country and what we as Christians can do about it, how we can unite under one banner, the banner of Jesus Christ. And then also July 28th, also at 6 p.m., right in Olympia, Washington, in the heart of darkness, Kingdom to Capital Tour is coming. 20,000 plus people expected at that event. Tell everyone you know, take the day off, show up. It's going to be a Friday, so you don't even have to wake up early the next morning. Take the day off, unite under one banner, and see what God is about to do here in Washington State. Also, in the You Are the Plan segment, if you haven't heard this, hear it again. You've got 2 more weeks. Plant a garden this year. And if you want to be part of the Kingdom Garden Club here at On Fire Ministries, send us a message. And last but not least, check out the idea regarding alternative currency called Valarum, V-A-L-A-R-U-M. It is a new idea, new in like the last 10 years, okay, but new for humanity, and I think it might resonate with a lot of you out there in Patriot Radio land. This is Matt Shea. Thank you so much for joining me today on Patriot Radio. May God bless all of you. And he is making this generation the greatest one. The awakening is here. Keep up the fight.